Good afternoon and welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks, 10 minutes after the hour of 12. We are with you until 2 p.m. Myself and John Stout, we're still here. And the number is still 434-1790. You can still WhatsApp me on 266-IVOB and you can email me on peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. And I look forward to hearing from you using all of these facilities. Yeah, we have statues for all types of men. How many statues do we have of women? We know there are many young girls and teens, the first female prison warden inspired back then. Even though you don't know who she is, that's no fault of hers. A lack of the educational system and teaching in Barbados would help us to understand a bit more about Barbadians. We should build a statue that shows the contribution of all types of Barbadian women. It doesn't necessarily have to be one that was on a pedestal. well, certainly I've not heard the suggestion before today, but you know, the conversation it started essentially ignited a reality that there are so many women who were trailblazers in their work. The first female that drove a bus, the first female that drove a SSA vehicle, the first female that worked behind an SSA vehicle. I mean, we could go on and on and on. so let's be clear that there is, in terms of inspiration, you know, there is a whole lot that you can do that's outside of necessarily building a statue. I'm told that the lady's name, the first female bus driver, that she was a hunt. This is what someone is saying, but then someone is telling me it's about somebody different altogether. Anyhow, I'll read some of those emails to you as we continue the program. So 434-1790, good afternoon and welcome.
Mr. Wickham, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Uncle Mark.
Uncle Mark.
Good, good.
Keep it well.
I'm good, man.
I want to raise three matters with you, which will be very fast. Mm-hmm. Now, the first thing, Mr. Wickham, a lot of people seem not to have done the real history of Barbados. The reason I'm saying that, my nominee, if you want to call it that, for the replacement of the statue, is Old Joe Goddard. I don't know if you're familiar with Old Joe Goddard, who started the founder of Goddard Enterprises.
I know him, yeah, but you think he should be in a statue?
I'm speaking about old man Goddard. I'm not speaking about none of the sons.
I know the Goddard. I know he used to work at down in Fontibel, no?
As a matter of fact, the sidekick to Old Joe Goddard, who started as what we would consider to be a what's fat person, buying cattle from across the country and bringing to market to sell. That's how he made his living. Along with a Barbadian, the name they would mention, people would know this person who stood with Old Joe Goddard right up onto the end, after a gentleman by the name of Luli. Mm-hmm. Now, the answer to this is that if you go to Goddard's Enterprises building on Haggard Hall, chances are you're going to see a life, a photograph of both of them together. The reason why I'm saying Joe Goddard, that if the history is done, you would see that in the area of commerce, he was one of the most successful Barbadians, and he never turned his back away from his people of St. John or Barbados. Mm-hmm. That is why there's so many Goddard Enterprises throughout the Caribbean, and that is why when you look at the main street of Bridgetown, Harrison, you look at where the Goddard supermarket was set up, and you look at several places. I believe a study should be done on Old Joe Goddard, and it'll show that Old Joe Goddard, as far as a Barbadian, has done much to deserve a statue being placed for him. Not because he's white, because this idea that white people are not supposed, I don't go for that. I'm saying that his image alone shows you that somewhere along the line, that as far as a Barbadian coming from the parish of St. John, buying animals and selling them what's fat, walking up from the parishes to the market, then eventually become one of the major enterprises in Barbados and the Caribbean. I think a study should be done, and you would realize that Joe Goddard deserves at least to be acknowledged in terms of a Barbadian who have excelled, who brought along Barbadians with him, who made it possible for several Barbadians, both white and black, to have succeeded. That is that one. I want to come to the point that gratitude must be given. I listened to a program on Sunday calling program that was dealing with culture. I was so disappointed, but then my afternoon was made possible because Starcom must be complimented, because from about 2 o'clock, right up until 3 o'clock, after 3 o'clock, they played all local music. And I'm talking about, they didn't play any calypso genre. They didn't play any country and western genre. They didn't play any sports genre. They played singer, vocalist of R&B soul. And it was so impressive. So I want to compliment the person at VOB. And I believe it should be a regular thing on Sundays now. That segment between 2 and 3 or between 2 and 3.30 could be designed for local music. But then, I'm saying that to say this, when you hear the different feelings about culture, which was spoken by some of the people this morning, really and truly they're not familiar with the origin of those hard-working people who, without attaining any success, was able to leave something in memory of them. So that is it, that Sunday, those persons who were the first will probably be very proud to know that they've listened to all those hours of local music and no advertising in between, no station break, which is great. The other point I'm coming at today is today's paper, Newska Group Happy. You saw that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Newska Group Happy. After reading this is written by a very decent young lady, what's her name is Maria Bradshaw. But the comments, when you read the comments are from none of the newest car dealers. The comments are from at least their consultant. I say that to say this because everything about it, not even a quote from Mr. What you call his name, the minister responsible. So this is a one-sided article. I don't think that Newska Group Happy. I think this is the impression given by the person who represented them. But if you read it, you will see that no comment was made by Mr. Sutherland that could be quoted. And as far as that is concerned, you realize that somewhere along the line that all the mouthing to the reporter was by the person who was responsible for the newscar people. Yeah. Read it, and you will see it's not a fair article.
Fair enough. I'm going to take a look at it. I didn't comment on the used car situation, but let me just use this opportunity to say that I thought the comments that were made by Joanne Haig on Friday of last week, were quite appropriate in terms of laying the groundwork for understanding about the whole idea of taxation and the impact that taxation had on the cost of vehicles and whatnot. I think that the guys need to have a level playing field. I believe that they should have the opportunity to make a living, but I think that we also have to ensure that they pay their fair share of taxes. If the conversation needs to go to the question of why are cars so heavily taxed, to me, that's another conversation. And I do feel that that's really where we need to go. We need to ask ourselves, should we be paying 100% duty on cars, period? So that is a different conversation. But certainly once the duty is set at the level that it is, it's unfair for one set of people to be paying all of those duties and the other set of people not to be paying those duties. So it's not an unreasonable conversation to have.
But what I'm saying, you agree that the play fee must be leveled.
It has to be, yeah.
But the whole thing about leveling the play field, one of the things that came out of it is that the valuing of the new cars will not come.
It's not precisely, and the value is determining that rates are lower than they really should be. So if we can talk about leveling playing field, then level it all together, because you can't say to me that I have to pay true value or I have to pay tax on true value. You're paying tax on an assumed value, which is not really true value. And I'm competing with you and the playing field is level. That's not fair. The other thing is that the people who sell new cars, they have a regimen to which they have to adhere. So they can't sell you a new car and then you need a part for the next week and they don't have it in stock. While a person who sells used cars doesn't have that restriction on his ability or her ability to make a living. And I think that that's also part of the leveling that we need to talk about.
You know, some of the new car dealers bring in spare parts.
Mm-hmm.
the position here is that a lot of the new car dealers have been disadvantaged in many, many ways. But what you look at is that there's so many new car dealers, new car dealers seem to have gone out of business because the playing field was not level. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be level, that means that these players of new car, take for example, somebody could bring in an old damaged car, repair it, put it on the market for sale, and then eventually it disadvantages others. So I believe that there should be a more open situation for those entrepreneurs, those vendors who sell motor cars, who invest in the money in motor cars and bring in motor cars for people. They should not be placed at the disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And as soon as it can be sorted out, then it'll be better for everybody.
I'm told that you have very close relations to one of them. I didn't realize that. So I understand that you're speaking from an informed perspective where they're concerned.
To be honest with you, there's so many there you don't know. I feel that there's a need for a stir-up. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm saying what I'm saying just at my door, then it means that there's a problem as far as getting his car sold.
Yeah, well,
there's a problem, so I would like
and
to...
And maybe I need to consider buying one, because I've been driving the same car now for more than 10 years, so...
Yeah. you don't live in Barbados.
I am not a car person. That's always been my weakness. I ain't really a car person. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate hearing you, and we will talk again in the not-too-distant future, hopefully. Apparently, the lady's name is Pamela Hunt. Pamela Hunt was the first woman that ever drove a transport board bus in Barbados. A gentleman whose mother is 74, who used to work at the transport board with Ms. Hunt, has just confirmed that. So the lady's name is Pamela Hunt. And then someone said to me, "Thou shalt not make unto thyself a graven image or the likeness of anything that is in the heaven above or in the earth beneath or in the waters under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down to them and worship them." So I'm presuming that this means with respect to statues, because I guess that is a graven image. So to each his own. Down to brass tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir.
Can we have a mutual conversation before hurting anyone's corns? This conversation is with both you. Good.
In life they say if you mash my corns, I gonna mash your back.
Well, so. You can mash back my back. Just don't push the button. Do you don't push the button? I want you to respond to me. Mm. All right, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir.
What's your definition about a nice marriage?
I don't like where this conversation is going. I have a nice marriage.
I
think I have a nice marriage, but I believe that a nice marriage is for the two people who are in the marriage to determine. That's how it goes.
Okay. Secondly, and don't get me wrong, I try to sort out certain things here. Secondly, in your type of marriage.
You mean your type of marriage? Your marriage.
How do you differentiate the Miss and Mister?
Because in my marriage, there are two men, so there's no Miss or Mister. There is Mister or Mister.
Mister and Mister.
When we were pronounced marriage, they pronounced us husbands. Well, the French version thereof, but you get the point. So, what I think needs to happen is that you probably need to get your head around the idea that in some marriages there are two men, in some marriages there are two women, and in some marriages there are a man, there's a man, and there's a woman. And indeed, other varieties of marriages that we don't have in Barbados, you will have one man and several women.
And the eyesight of God, which one do you think is
But I don't believe
appropriate?
In God, so what's the point?
But why you say that, Mr. Wickham, that you don't believe
in
God?
Sir, if this is going to come to a conversation about whether or not I believe in God and why I don't know it makes sense to continue it. Because you're concerned about my marriage and the eyesight of God, and I'm saying to you that the eyesight of God is irrelevant to me because I don't believe in God. My marriage is important for me and me alone and my partner. So it's not really a topic for conversation as to whether or not it is right to be isolated to God, because it doesn't matter. I don't believe in God.
Let me leave out that and move on to another time when you have this, that when we have a conversation where you can hit on this topic. Let me move to my next point. Mr. Gregson Brown, Antigua. Mr. Gregson Brown, like he wanted to eat the cake and the icing together. I pick out that about him. He want to eat the cake and icing together. Why don't Mr. Gregson Brown understand? And I am going to say this. Why don't he understand Goliath and give others a try at Goliath? Because Gregson fail. Mr. Gonzalez fail. Do something that's really, you mean you can sit there and let die and die and die. And then again, he come in with all types of there'll be rinky dinky.
You know what? I don't understand about what you're saying. Why is all of this necessary, though?
Come on, Peter. We see Liat failing over all the years.
But why is Liat failing? Why is Liat failing? Is Liat failing because of the management that is being provided by Prime Minister Brown?
That got to be part of it too, Mr. Vicar.
The problem is that I have a difficulty when you have defined this issue in terms of Gaston Brown, and you're saying that he's the reason that Liat has failed, right?
I think he should let
go. I have reservations about the way in which this whole issue has been handled. Having said that, however, I have a problem with your suggesting that it's his fault and his fault alone. So Liat has problems. Liat has problems, and regional transportation has problems that go beyond the gaze of Gaston Brown, Mia Motley, or Ralph Gonzalez. So to suggest that he is the reason for its failure, and that if he wants to see it work, that he should let it go and allow it to go elsewhere. So do you realize that Gaston Brown stands responsible for over $50 million in salaries and wages, in holiday money, and in gratuities that have to be paid to Liat staff that are registered there?
And under his leadership, they're in a debt of over $100 million.
But the point is, you gotta stop there. You can't say under his leadership, because the chairman of Liat, to the best of my knowledge, is Owen Arthur. The manager of Liat, to the best of my knowledge, is a lady who is Bajan. The board of management has a Bajan on it. The second edition, or the second half, of Down to Brass Tacks for today, the 7th day of July 2020. Peter Wickham, I'm here with you, and I'm in with Mr. John Stout. We're here until 2 p.m., and we're happy to have so many of you calling and listening, to sending us WhatsApp messages and whatnot. Special good afternoon to my cousin Chica Moore, who is online from Miami, representing the Barbadian community, who lives over there and keeps in touch. And so let's continue. Are you still there, caller?
You're still here,
right? So you were telling me about your Liat views. Go right ahead.
Yes, Mr. Wickham, I'm saying to you that I got a smelly feeling from Mr. Gregson Brown that he believes that keeping Liat office in Antigua is a success to Liat. And he got to feel that Mr. Gregson Brown got to feel to understand that keeping a office can go into another country and be very productive.
All right. Let's start.
He went as far to, wait a minute, he went as far as to say it with his own mouth.
Yeah. Let's start.
The office will never leave Antigua as long as he's there.
All right. Well, let's start, as Barbadians would say, let's start at the first beginning.
Yeah.
Right? I know you were probably telling the beginning God created the earth in 7 days, but we're not going there.
Yeah.
This is the first beginning of Liat. Do you think that it is reasonable that a prime minister looks out for the interests of his country?
I know you're going to say that, Mr.
No, but I'm asking you a question.
But Mr. Wickham, you're going to sit there. You see something failing.
I'm trying to walk you through the process. And it has to start with an appreciation that what Prime Minister, and his name is Gaston Brown.
Yeah, I know.
Right. What Prime Minister Brown is doing is no different to what Prime Minister Motley is doing. Right? I think that you have made an assumption that the reason that Liat is failing is because it is headquartered in Antigua. And you have seemingly made a similar assumption.
That's one of them.
Hold on a second. You've seemingly made a similar assumption that if LIAT were moved, headquarters were moved to Barbados, that it would fly. And that this is the basic problem that you're seeing, right?
Yes.
Sir, what if I were to tell you that while that may be part of the issue, the issue is way beyond that, okay? The question of headquarters. The other point that Gaston Brown has made, and I can tell you that I worked in Antigua under the previous administration and under this administration. And if it is one thing that Antiguans, whether they support the UPP or the ABLP, agree on, is that LIAT's headquarters should remain in Antigua. And I'll tell you why. The reason is very simple. A significant number of people are employed in Antigua through LIAT, and naturally they will want to keep those jobs. That is not unreasonable. A significant number of people are related to people who are based in Antigua, and naturally they will want to keep those jobs. LIAT has invested heavily in terms of building a hangar for the aircraft that LIAT services, and that is also in Antigua. And of course, the idea of investing so heavily in a facility to service airplanes and then the airplanes be based elsewhere is something that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, then,
so there are several reasons why, and then you look back to the historic fact that when LIAT 1974 Limited was set up, from the beginning, the Antiguan government was there and was participating. And LIAT has accumulated losses, millions and millions of dollars per annum. Last year, the Prime Minister said that the losses were in the vicinity of $12 million EC dollars. LIAT has, the government of Antigua has carried that burden. So the point I'm making is that while I personally don't know if the headquarters being in Antigua is necessarily a good idea, I am also aware of good reasons why the leadership of Antigua, whether it be Gaston Brown or Baldwin Spencer, would want the headquarters to remain there because they have invested significantly in it over time. And all I'm saying to you is I'm not asking you to agree with Prime Minister Brown. I'm just trying to get you to see where he is coming from and try to understand the challenge that he is facing going forward. Because, and I tell you, there are few leaders in the Caribbean now of an economy his size that are faced with the kind of debt burden that he will be faced if LIAT collapses tomorrow without support from any of the other islands.
Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Wickham. would you, in your own mind, say that LIAT was run properly?
But sir, I've been the first person to say that it is badly managed.
Okay, good. Hold.
And I will go further and give you this, that a part of the reason that it is badly managed is because it's up there.
Okay. And
that's a part of the problem.
And it also collapsed in 74 as well. There got to be something.
No, but I don't think that the 74 collapse had anything to do with it being there.
I just throw that as a spark.
Don't throw sprats now.
74 and now it's on the verge again. Look at my fact that it's on the verge again of collapsing again.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm saying to you, Mr. Wickham, suppose now these shareholders decide now, well, listen, I had enough. You're going to be like sitting down some way to get to that point. Because you don't know what a man could get this morning. So, listen, look, I had enough of this. Right? So what these shareholders decided to get and say they had enough of this? I am saying they need to try something different. They are going to come with something different. Mm. And I am still sticking by my guns. To have an entity in your country doesn't mean that it will run efficiently.
No, but I don't know that that's what it's about, you know. You want it to work. When I said to you just now that, yes, I'm convinced that that's part of the problem, I think a bigger part of the problem is the fact that you have governments like St. Lucia, governments like Grenada, governments like St. Kitts and Nevis, who benefit from LIAT bringing people to their shores and who are not shareholders, who don't share in the economic burden of the losses that LIAT makes every year. Because let's be clear, being a shareholder government doesn't mean that you're earning money, you know. Being a shareholder government means that you earn the right to help pay off the debt that's accumulated every year.
All right. Okay.
And my hope is that we can get to a stage where we appreciate that it's a debt that should be shared by all, and we will share it equally.
Okay. Let me make my last quick point.
Sure.
National Insurance Building, Mr. Wickham. Yesterday, my sister was going to do something for me at the National Insurance Building.
Is it the new one or the old one?
The one that's standing,
not the one that licked down.
Not the one that licked down.
Okay, because she would have been very disappointed if she went to the one that licked down to do business.
So she called me, and she asked me what to do. I said, okay, I will call the National Insurance and get back to her. Mr. Wickham, I made a call. The phone rang and rang and rang till it went back to the same receptionist. Until it went back to the same receptionist that put me through in the beginning. Or she put me back through again. It rang and it rang and rang and rang and rang off till it went back to the same receptionist again. I said, Miss Receptionist, you're the only person that working at this entity with the call coming back to you all the time. And I even had a discussion with her and letting her know that I was trying to get you to this, to the self-employment division, the area where you pay your self-employment contributions, right? That's the department she was trying to, she was putting me to. And no one would answer the phone, Mr. Wickham, the Prime Minister, somebody has to wake up and say something about that building. That building, that's obnoxious. It's very, very
about the building or about the service that the building
the
provides?
Service. And I said to the receptionist, because I asked
because you weren't speaking to the building,
I asked her her name. She told me her name is Miss Marshall. I said, well, I'm going to call Brastats and I'm going to say, look, you're the only person working there and you're doing a good job. You know what I mean? Don't laugh, Mr. Wickham.
Sir, I'm laughing. You know why I'm laughing?
Everything is terrible.
Sir, you know why I'm laughing? Because she's answering the phone because that's her job. Her job is to answer the phone.
Yeah, but she's putting you.
You are calling someone in an office, right?
Yes.
Who
yes.
probably has several people sitting in front of them waiting on their service.
Well, Mr. Wickham, the same thing I said to her, you mean if they are dealing with a customer, what's wrong with just answering the phone quickly?
Sir, that's one of the main rules of customer service. No, sir. Sir, if you were that customer that was sitting in front of National Insurance, if you had been down there and stood in line from 7 o'clock to be the first person, and you finally got to the officer at 11 o'clock, and you sat down in front of her and you're discussing your business, and every 5 minutes she's telling you, hold on a second, yes, hello, National Insurance office, can I help you? How angry would you be? Because it's not only you that calling, you know. Sir, that telephone at National Insurance does not start ringing. It does not start ringing.
So what you're saying, Mr.
So all I'm saying to you, sir, is that we have a problem in regarding National Insurance, and we have a problem with the extent to which too few of their services are automated in a way that you can go online and find out. So you have to call someone. The other problem is that they don't have officers in every department just to answer phones. They have officers that are doing jobs. And the rules of customer service these days dictate that if someone is in front of you, you do not leave that person's attention to go answer the telephone. Okay? Sir, you don't do it. You don't do it. Because it's not only you that is calling, and you can rest assured if they answer your call, the person that calls 2 minutes later, they will answer their call. And that lady that was sitting down in front of them from 7 o'clock in the morning waiting to get to see them is annoyed at the fact that I finally get in front of you. Are you answering your telephone?
Can't hurt, Mr. Wickham.
Sir, it does. It does. Because you have to be clear in terms of the lines of responsibility.
You just know you saw the oil and billing 7 days earlier. A split second can't hurt.
I think that is good that after this conversation, you and I can both laugh about something like the world being built in 7 days.
But serious note, they've got to do signs.
Listen, sir, I am with you, and I understand your concern. National Insurance is under tremendous pressure now in terms of the highest volume that they have ever experienced. And everybody calling to find out where the money. Right?
Yes.
Everybody calling to find out where the money. The staff they have, the levels have not increased.
Is that why they're struggling? They're not answering the phone? Is that why they're not answering the
because
telephone?
Because they're doing something else.
Because they don't want to pay the money?
I don't think so. They don't find the money to pay. The problem is that they are doing something else. When I leave this program, sometimes in the afternoons, I tell you a little story. Sometimes I go home and I sit in my office, which is where I also work. And sometimes the telephone doesn't start ringing. Okay?
Yeah.
From time to time, you have to mute the phone because you're trying to do something that requires thought. Yeah. And then somebody will tell you, but just give me 5 minutes because I just want to tell you something. And I'm saying sometimes you got to remember that the 5 minutes it takes to answer a phone to engage with someone, it means then that you're distracted. And as soon as you start, the telephone rings again. So I have noticed that there are some offices where unless your job is that of a receptionist to answer phones, and you have a customer in front of you, the rule is normally deal with the customer, and when the customer goes, then you'll answer the phone.
But Mr. Wickham, I pick up for these workers, though. Some of these offices got delinquent workers, though. But see, they ain't doing anything.
Let me give them the benefit of the doubt, because I will be hard pressed to see how a person who works in National Insurance now could be delinquent with the amount of work that them got to do.
Listen, some of them doing it, Mr. Wickham. Believe it, it's so harsh, but believe it is a fact.
Right. All right, sir, but thank you for calling. It was good chatting with you, notwithstanding the initial hurdles that we had to overcome, but I nonetheless enjoyed the conversation with you. Let's hope that we both learn something. Let's take another call. Good afternoon and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon and welcome. Somebody's telling me that people in NIS need to learn to multitask. Something is seriously wrong and NIS can do better. So you should be able to walk and chew gum, or you should be able to talk to somebody in front of you and talk to the phone at the same time. Yeah, right. Dr. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. And you?
I'm good.
Okay, it's Raw.
Hey, Raw. Yeah. Hey, Raw. Long time no hear.
Yeah. Mike, I called you last week, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah. The position is to have 45, what you were saying, the first lady, let me make this abundantly clear. I have nothing to do with no monument. I have coined a phrase some years ago, and Mr. Dennis Johnson will tell you that he always remains fixed to this phrase. I don't believe in no monument. Give me monumental decisions. I've highlighted, people listening to me would have heard me over the years, highlighting monumental decisions. Where Rosa Parks ain't getting back on the bus, she made a monumental decision and changed that situation in America forever. The another monumental decision, man, Mr. Albarza, free secondary education, monumental decision. When Tom Adams said, see the Freehold Tenantry Act, monumental decision, help the whole island, I will be here to say, those are the sort of things I want, monumental decision. I ain't discussing no monument. And anybody listening would say, we're all on top of no Nelson. Got no time for Nelson. Monumental decision that will last for another 1,000 years. Okay, so what I want to say now is, Pamela Hunt. It was the first female bus driver in Barbados. Pamela Hunt, Tom's called to St. George.
Somebody just sent me a note. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Pamela, we're all here. How are you doing?
Mm-hmm. She's alive still?
Yeah, she's alive.
She listens to the Brass Tacks?
I would feel so. By now, the amount of calls of the establishment, she probably got a lot of calls. Somebody would then call Pamela and say, well, everybody want to know who the first lady is.
She's still able-bodied and so on?
Yeah, I think I'm older than she is, and I'm able.
I would like to talk to Pam one day on the program.
Well, I'll do it.
I would love for her to call in. Yeah,
I'll set it up for you. Rest assured, we'll talk to Pam.
If she's WhatsApp savvy, she could call me, and we could. No, I would love to chat with her about her experiences and what it was like. Because apparently, she went on to be a conductor. That's what she said in the interview. She went to be a conductor.
I can't. I know she was the first bus.
Right. She went to be a conductor. Well, and when she got there, they told her that they didn't need any conductors, she could go into training to be a driver.
And she went on, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Initially, she started to be a conductor.
Right. That was what she said in the interview, that she went for work as a conductor.
A conductress.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Conductress. Right. The thing is now that I know Pam well, and her mother was my mother's matron. Her mother served in the child care board at the Nightingale. I know that I'm from Workman, St. George, from Thomas College. I'll get Pam to speak to you, Mr.
But you know, the funny thing is that these days, when you see a woman driving a bus, you don't even think twice. It's not like, in those days, it was such an odd thing to see. You know, you stop and look, wait, are you seeing it right? But these days, you know.
That was something else.
These days, when you see a woman flying a plane, you don't even think twice. Right?
And Pam is 6 foot. Yeah. Clear.
Okay, she's a big lady.
Very erect. Her mom was a Celtic for a woman. But some was a sturdy, big lady, man. Mm-hmm. Her mom. Yeah, anyhow, it was something for Pam. Going on now, I like the news just now with the renewable energy. But I've got another renewable I want to see take off into the magnitude of the same renewable energy. I'll be relentless on this one. I want to see the recycling in Barbados take up, because there's millions of dollars, if not billions, to be made from the recycling aspect. And Barbados. And I'm saying it is high time to get recycling up with all the COVID and the loss of business and thing, and employment and whatever, and foreign exchange. I am saying recycling need to be front burner status. And I'm saying, what's the situation with Paul Bynum up there in Bees? I mean, for longest time, he's there knocking at the door. He wants to get his recycling plant up and running. I mean, if you look at all the garbage that he's got stored there, just stop for a second and imagine that garbage in your community. You know how dirty your community would be? Recycling is very, very pressing, and there's room for it. What's the hold up? I am not knocking the recyclable. It's the renewable. Renewable is here to sustain because I like the renewable aspect and whatever, and it's going to engender a lot of work and what have you. So I'm not knocking renewable, but bring along the recycling with it.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Now, okay. You want to say anything as regarding that?
No. I'm a supporter of the recycling thing, so yeah, I'm good there.
Okay. Now, Art, quickly, a friend of mine, he had a concern with his son and renewal driver's permit, etc. And he had his permit, his son had his permit renewed just before the COVID, but then the COVID, you know, collided with everything that was planned and lit up his whole program. He's contending that he had to pay $35 that was not used because of circumstances beyond his son's control. He's saying that he should have been given some accommodation or whatever and still validate his $35 when they had resumed. Now, on the resumption, he has to pay a new $35. But not only that, if he had gotten his test or whatever before the COVID or during the COVID, he would have only have to pay the $35. But now the expiration came about. Now, he has suffered an expiration after the resumption now. So instead of $35, he has got to pay $80 because his expiration came about. You understand that part properly? Mm-hmm. You think you understand what I'm saying? He paid $35, but then he wasn't able to use the $35. He's saying he should have a waiver on accommodating situation to let him use that $35 when they resume, because he was in before the dilemma with the COVID. But now, coupled with that, his thing has no expert. So instead of now the renewal, he has to pay now for a whole overall thing, which is $80. So he's saying that if that happens, there should be some discussion or it should be facilitated somewhere along. And reasonably so, because there'll be thousands of people probably in the same plight as himself. So that is saying that could be discussed.
Okay.
No, I'm saying now going forward from there, I want to finish on politics. I really want to cut loose on some politics in the end real quick, but I want to joke in this one here now. You see, there's a situation with this thing, but when you're preparing your house and you have to move out and all this discussion, you see from the time that I hit the ground, how much fallout and how much discussion. I'm always on the ground every second of the day. People, I mean, infuriated about it. And then they say, well, or they put on hold going forward. You remember that situation at Emanated Friday?
Mm-hmm.
But if your house can get repaired, you got to move out and all that. You remember it, Peter?
Yeah, so I'm listening. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know there's another furor with Mr. Sutherland, where he's going to try to do something. My point is, when you're going to make these sort of decisions, because don't forget you have an electorate here that becoming disgruntled. And I say to Miss Molly, listen to me, please. Guard against becoming unpopular. Mm. Guard against becoming unpopular because the community, they speak out and the people are irate about certain things. Guard against becoming unpopular. I know a lot of advice is necessary and thing, but you keep your vigilance on this. Don't become unpopular. Let me go now to politics. Keeping it the politics.
But we're all no, we can have to pull out stamps on that one. So. Leave that as the last contribution, and then we get it. Because we only got our remaining on the program. We got a lot of people that have been calling and trying to get through. All right? So.